Hi, this is different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very different. We're on Zoom.
We're on Zoom. Well, I think we've only ever done this once before, and I don't think that episode actually aired.
I think the reason, I can't remember the reason why there was, I can't remember what it was.
Because we're both incredibly busy is the usual reason.
Yeah, no, I think it might have had something to do with that. I sound like the guests now. Are we using the video for this?
We are. Well, no, we're not because we're not recording.
Okay. No, we're not.
Which would only make sense to you and I, but if we were recording, we could, but we're not, so we can't.
Oh, no, we're not. We're recording the audio. So if you're listening...
Recording audio, but not video, yeah. So just completely ignore the last 30 seconds, listener. Hope you've enjoyed it.
You don't get to see our smiling faces.
No, but just very, very briefly, the reason we're recording separately is because, obviously, this is the build-up to Christmas. Christmas is an incredibly busy time at a radio station. And as much as we literally say every single week, thank you so much to ExpressFM for letting us record our podcast there. Unfortunately, literally just a few days before Christmas, it was a high precedent of people needing to use the studio. So we're doing this
we say
home.
Thank you very much, ExpressFM Studios, for allowing us and giving us that support. But this week they said, bugger off. They finally did it. They finally said, bugger off. We're busy.
Yes.
What actually happened is, yes, of course, yeah, a radio station, of course, there is a premium the week before Christmas because we all like a bit of a break over Christmas. This very podcast will take a break.
Yes, we will be taking a couple of two-week breaks, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, two-episode. We're going to have a two-episode break and then we'll be back, of course, in the new year with lots of new and exciting things to talk about. But in the meanwhile, so schedules and things are moving around because everybody's trying to wrap everything up for Christmas, of course, like quite literally in some cases. And so, yeah, we have a studio. We have one studio, which is quite small, which is the one I use to make the composer series.
Everybody's got a box room, right?
Yeah, the broom cupboard, we like to call it. So this is where I'm in the room that we make the composer series in and score heads. But unless Paul sits on my actual lap...
Which, now we have got close.
Yeah,
I don't think.
It's very warm in here. So Paul is from the comfort of his own home, which looks nice and lovely and comfortable. To be fair, this is a nice, comfortable room as long as Mr. Dave Joyce doesn't turn the heating on, and then I'm going to be in trouble. So I'm going to melt like the literal snowman.
Yes. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's always greatly appreciated when you listen. For those that don't know, if you want to find us on our socials, you can do that at Need a Bigger Pod on all our different socials.
And I am at John Brown. That's at J-O-N Brown TV.
And I am at Paul Swampy Marsh on all socials as well.
Yeah, we are. That's right. It's that time. It's the time of year where we celebrate festivity and joy, but also middle-aged men moaning about movies. Or at least one. We seem to take it in turns, don't we? Sometimes it's you, sometimes it's me. But very rarely do we together go... Meh.
Yeah, not very often. But it's rather special when it does happen.
Yeah, it is rather special. Please, is there anything in the lineup this week that's made us both go... Meh?
No, I was literally just thinking about that. And I don't think there is. And I don't think there has been for maybe a week or two. Certainly both of us. It's like a bit of a blue moon occasion, isn't it? It's so rare when both of us really rip into a film.
I recall you being very contented with everything you saw this week.
Yeah, very
much
so.
But we'll get to that. What have we got coming up, sir?
So we're going to have a little look at the news. We're going to have a look at the trailers. Now, the irony is last week, there were no trailers released at all. We had literally nothing to talk about. And then the second we finished recording, which would have been last Monday... they seem to drop about a fantastic trailer every couple of hours, which is always the way when you're recording these things. You never know what's going to come out. So we have got a lot of great new trailers to talk about this week. We're going to be talking about the films that are coming out over Christmas. We're going to be looking back at Godzilla Minus One and Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nuggets. But of course, the big, big, big thing is this week we have done our tip top five Christmas movies, and I have to say the listener interaction has been absolutely phenomenal on this one.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw loads of them coming in. That's really well. The tip top five Christmas movies, I think, was always going to be a big one, and it was one we were excited about because I knew a lot of people had a lot to say about that. So I'm really pleased. Thank you so much. If anybody's written in, we will read them all out. We're going to get to all of them, including Simon Bruce's. We promise this time. Promise.
Yes.
So we're very sorry, Simon. Simon Bruce sent us a disaster movies tip top five, and somehow, I don't know how, through...
It just got lost in the...
chaos, yeah. And he's Simon Bruce, of course, responsible for our theme at the beginning there, responsible for our jingles. He's also our post-producer. He's the reason we sound so great. So thank you very much to him. Merry Christmas, Simon Bruce.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Simon, absolutely.
Yes, and so at some point, we will definitely read everyone's, including Simon's, tip top five out. I, of course, have absolutely nothing prepared, but then why would we change the habit of a lifetime?
To be fair, exactly. And also, it's your tip top five Christmas movies. This isn't one that you should have to think about too hard, really, is it?
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Right, well, let's start with the news. A couple of big bits of news, really, and a very surprising piece of news, to be completely honest with you, in the fact that one of the biggest films of the year, which was the Super Mario Brothers movie, has got no sequel lined up as yet, really, according to the star Jack Black. He says there's been complete radio silence. However, he has said that he's very enthusiastic about reprising his role and would love for there to be a sequel, which, you know, I'm absolutely not surprised that he wants to be in it because, you know, I mean, Jack Black's a great star, but this has certainly been a big role for him, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they haven't immediately jumped on the sequel train for that because it made all the, aside from being a five-star film, it made all the money ever.
So it made $1.36 billion worldwide. Yeah.
Wow. I think, actually, I think I know the answer to this. Last I heard, I think Nintendo, who were obviously the driving force behind it. Of course, this was from Illumination Studios. It's from Universal. I think Nintendo, you may have to look this up. Please don't quote me on it. But I think Nintendo's focus at the moment is on Zelda. And I think that's with Sony.
Right.
I'm not sure. It's bonkers to me. I get that they're kind of feathering their nest and all that. We've realised now that Nintendo properties can work really well as full-length movies, right?
Yeah.
But I would have jumped on the sequel train. I mean, and it's interesting to me as well. It's like Universal Illumination could probably have cracked on with a sequel to that whilst they also had irons in the Sony fire making Zelda, right? Yeah.
You would think that there are multiple teams doing multiple sort of different things. So, yeah, I'd be very surprised if we don't see something at some point. I guess the other thing is, of course, the two Sonic films that have been out have both been very, very good. And yeah. I guess, you know, the Super Mario Brothers movie was a lot better than most people thought it was going to be. So I guess the pressure is on to make sure that that sequel is just as good. And maybe there are ideas being bandied about that are not quite hit the target. As of yet, I mean, it's quite interesting, really, what Jack Black has said. He's actually said that, you know, as in typical Jack Black style, he wants the sequel to be a musical and he wants it to be titled Bowser's Revenge.
See, now that could work. In my mind, I could see Brian Tyler.
Yes, yes.
And the Tenacious D Boys figuring out a really rocking soundtrack. That could work.
Let's face it, Peaches is just like the standout hit, isn't it?
Is it like one of the most streamed songs or something like that? Yeah. It could work. And like you said, I'm sure Brian Tyler would be down with that. Totally.
Yes. So, absolutely. Yeah. So looking forward to seeing that as and when and if we get to see it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah, I think they're kind of putting all their eggs in the Zelda basket right now. So we'll see.
Now, Ridley Scott, who, of course, has been very busy with Napoleon and is currently in production of Gladiator 2, has announced what his next movie that he's going to be involved in is going to be called.
Okay.
It is going to be called Bomb in capitals. So literally B-O-M-B in capitals.
Is that like speed in capitals?
I don't know. It's the honest answer to that one. It all seems quite interesting. It's derived from a short story, so it's always very interesting when you take a short story and turn it into then, you know, a bigger film. About a hostage negotiator called into duty the night before his wedding in London.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, Fast and the Furious have got, checks notes, 11 films out of a short story so far. So, it was an article, to be fair. It was an article in a newspaper or a magazine. But anyway, yeah, they got 11 movies out of a magazine article or a newspaper article. So, you know, it's possible.
So this kind of sounds to me similar-ish. Do you remember Phone Booth with Colin Farrell?
I like Phone Booth.
I like Phone Booth, but it sounds similar-ish to that. So it's, like I say, set in World War II or just after World War II. And the man basically has parked himself in a construction site in Piccadilly Circus. There's an unexploded bomb from World War II. He tells the local law enforcement that he's only going to speak to Frankie, who is the man who's just about to get married. And it sets off a chain of events in which Frankie is drawn into an overnight struggle to stop the bomber with whom he has a past. Now, the one thing that I have read that tickled me is the fact that bomb, in capital letters, is a working title, and it may be changed for the very obvious reasons, because if bomb does in fact bomb, there are too many jokes that can be written.
Wow, yeah, there is that. Yeah, that's interesting. It's got phone booth and speed vibes. Definitely.
Yes, very much.
Yeah. I think that's good, because I kind of feel like this is Ridley being truly Ridley. Because
there's very little information about when this is going to start, because obviously Gladiator 2 was halted for all the various different strikes and everything else like that. So they're back to filming that and back to working on that at the moment. So I can't imagine it's certainly going to probably, middle of next year, early next year or something like that.
I'm going to assume Gladiator is going to be called Gladiator, not just Gladiator 2. I don't think Gladiator 2 is befitting of a Gladiator sequel. I think it should be called, Gladiator Blood of the Ages or something like that. I think that's probably
No, you're missing a trick here. It surely just should be called Gladiators, in the same way Alien was Aliens.
Like Predators. Yeah,
there you go.
Two very different films, though. This is the same director, right? So
yeah.
But
yeah.
Alien and Aliens are two very different movies, in the same way Gremlins and Gremlins 2 are, for example. But yeah,
very much so. But no, there's no actual sort of anything concrete on the Gladiator sequel either. It's just kind of provisionally known as Gladiator sequel or Gladiator 2. I don't think there's an official name for that as of yet either. But certainly looking forward to seeing Bomb, or again, whatever it is going to be called when it's released. It'd be interesting to see that when it comes out.
Yeah. Well, let's see how Gladiator does. I'll be interested to see what happens next, but I'm assuming we're a few years away from either of those. Well, Gladiator is next year, isn't it?
Yeah, I would imagine so.
So I imagine it's going to be a couple of years before we see Bomb or whatever it ends up being called. But yeah, interesting.
Yes. And finally, in our news feature, you wouldn't think this would necessarily be news, but it actually kind of is. So The Batman, which of course is having a sequel as well, has been given an official title. And whilst the official title may seem quite dull and mundane, it's actually very, very interesting. So the Batman sequel will simply be called The Batman Part 2.
Okay.
And the reason that this is so interesting and has never been done before is there has never been a Batman sequel that is literally with a number. So there has never been a Batman 2. It has always had a name. So The Batman Part 2 is the first time that has ever been done.
So I think, here's my thought process. I think in his Matt Reeves, as we discussed before, came up with the Apes trilogy. He did his own Apes trilogy, which was amazing. And I'm wondering if that's where his head is at with this. I think he's going to do a three-part story. By the sounds of things, Batman, part two, Batman, part three. Now, in comic books, this is quite regular, like, Gotham Knight book two, Gotham Knight book three. So in following in line of like the comic style, that is actually a thing in the Batman part two and the Batman part three is very comic-y, you know what I mean? You're right, though. In fact, there has been no Batman sequel, because it's either Batman versus Superman or Batman Returns or Batman and Robin, Batman and Forever.
Robin.
Yeah, so this it is the first time. But I think the other reason why this, because it was funny, right as you mentioned it, I remembered the other day, James Gunn said that, because people were saying, well, why isn't Pattinson part of the DCU, the wider spectrum of multiversal films within the canon of the motion pictures and with Aquaman and everybody else and all this kind of stuff? And actually, James Gunn said, and please, James Gunn, forgive me if this is complete hogwash and I've read this wrong somewhere, but I do believe that, I have reason to believe that James Gunn said, actually, Matt Reeves was offered the opportunity to become part of the DC universe. He declined. And James said
something about that. Yeah.
James said he was fully respective of what Matt was trying to do and was completely supportive of his vision for his version of Batman, which is why I think it's called Elseworlds or Otherworlds. I can't remember. I think James Gunn's created different brands right, within DC Studios. So you've got the DCU, which is what's going to become the larger, you know, thread moving through all the films.
Yeah, you're correct. It's Elseworlds.
Elseworlds. So DCEU is what we've had previously with your Wonder Womans and your, you know, your Henry Cavills and your Ben Afflecks, yes, and all that kind of stuff. So now what we're moving into under James Gunn and Peter Safran's leadership is DC Studios. And so DCU, this will become the place for official DC Comics films such as Superman Legacy, which is the film James Gunn's making right now. And within that strain, you will obviously have a Batman in there somewhere, but it won't be Rob Pattinson for that reason, in that Matt Reeves is quite happy staying in his own kind of pocket of the universe, creating these stories with Robert Pattinson. I think he's probably going to end up doing a trilogy, which is why he's called it part two. I think there'll be a part three as well. I think it will be a trilogy a la Nolan. And I think, yes, it will belong in this place that we call Elseworlds, which is stories from the DC universe that take place on a different timeline, right? So they don't, completely separate from...
As with other stories in the Elseworlds, the Penguin television series, which, you know, mentioned in Colin Farrell earlier, of course, he is going to be in that. And by the way, very much looking forward to that. Also, Joker, is it Folie à Deux?
Yes, so Joker, Joker 2, essentially, is also part of Elseworlds.
They're part of Elseworlds. And it says here, and also we're going to see an upcoming television series entitled The Brave and the Bold, which will be a Batman and Robin combo as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think that was a movie originally, and now they're saying it's a series.
It's a series.
It's a series now. That's interesting. I thought that was a film.
All of that to come. So, I mean, that's all quite exciting news, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think James Gunn's proven, you know, at Disney with the Marvel projects, Guardians is phenomenal, and he's very, very good with, and then with DC, you know, Suicide Squad and so forth, he's beat for beat at the moment. You know, his projects were the Suicide Squad, which is fantastic, and Peacemaker on TV, which was fantastic, like, and Superman Legacy, I imagine, will be absolutely phenomenal. So he's on the right course, and him and Peter Safran, you know, they know what they're doing. So we should see lots of excitement. But I like the idea that Matt Reeves is kind of like left to his own devices, because that means Matt can continue making more movies like The Batman, as opposed to movies that outside influences want him to make.
Well, so, of course, I think we can all agree The Batman was a fantastic film. And the Batman Part 2, we're not going to see until October of 2025.
That, again, because they haven't been had an opportunity to start it.
Yeah.
So, but worth waiting for. I think give it time. Allow it the time it needs to be made properly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd rather wait on these films to, you know, to make them as good as they possibly can be, rather than rushing them failing, you know, after such a great first film. That's the last thing we all want to see.
You don't want that. You want him to have his Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, 100%.
Totally.
100%.
Yeah.
So let's have a little look at the trailers. Like we did mention at the start of the show, there have been some really, really good
trailers dropping
in the last few days. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with Civil War. So this is set in a dystopian near future, and a team of journalists are going to travel across the United States during a rapidly escalating civil war that has engulfed the entire nation.
So, yeah, this is from A24, isn't it, Alex? Alex Garland, I think.
Alex Garland, got a fantastic cast: Jesse Plemons, Kirsten Dunst. It's timed at the moment, and as we all know, this could change before the release date. But it's timed at the moment at 3 hours and 15 minutes long. The irony, of course, that we did a disaster movie episode last week. This looks like a very big budget movie.
Yeah, interestingly though, I have this gut reaction to it that I feel like I am looking forward to that. I do have a sneaking suspicion that this might be something that we'll get through it and be like, that was epic, but it could have been a 6-part series. I don't know why I get that vibe from it.
I guess there's a lot of that, isn't there? There's still plenty of time. It's not coming until it's got an expected release date of the April 26th of 2024.
Yeah.
So still plenty of time to come on that. There's a lot of interesting things. I mean, one of the comments on, you know, in the trailer, of course, with Jesse Plemons, who plays a policeman on there when he's kind of got his gun pointed at some civilians, and they say, oh, I'm an American, what are you doing? And he simply turns to them and says, what kind of American are you? And I thought, oh, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Jury's still, I mean, like any trailer, the jury's still out on it, right? but we'll see. But
I think the interesting thing that we'll see this either sink or swim is going to be if it's overly political, because as we know, you know, I think Biden's coming to the end of his term and I believe there's elections next year. So if it stays clear of any political path, I think it could do very, very well. But if it's overly political, one way or the other, I have no idea which, but I think it could struggle. And it would be a shame to see any film of this magnitude maybe not succeed because of any political narratives rather than a film standing on its own film's 2 feet, if that makes sense.
Yeah, forgive me if I've got this backwards, but isn't Alex Garland British?
I've literally no idea. Shall I do a little quick check?
No, I think he is. Yeah, he's an English novelist and filmmaker. There
he is. Yes, absolutely. 100%.
I thought so, because he wrote The Beach, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah, he did. Yes, yeah. That's where I know him from. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Which Danny Boyle, of course, made into a film.
Yes.
So, yeah, he is. Oh, this would be interesting then.
I think the comment that I saw online that made me laugh is, I think, again, it's only through watching the trailer, but I think they're obviously, again, Civil War, so there are two different sides, but I think it's California and Texas that have teamed up with each other to take on the East Coast, I guess. And somebody commented, that's the most laughable bit about this film, is that Texas and California would ever team up together, which I thought was very, very good.
That's true, yeah. Thinking about it. Yeah, I'm interested for it. Well, let's see. When's it due?
So it is expected April 26th of 2024. So
there we go.
Spring 2024. It's been made in IMAX, so that's a good sign as well.
Oh yeah, actually, yeah, that puts it back in the cinema ballpark then.
Yes, yeah, very much so. Yeah, so hopefully being shot in IMAX, it's an A24 movie. Hopefully, no chance of it getting dropped down to a streaming only or anything else.
No,
so
I think
fingers crossed on that one.
If we've gone through all the trouble for IMAX, then I think yeah, we should be seeing that in the cinema. Okay, next.
Now, a trailer that I think you're going to be very excited about, certainly more excited than me, is Dune Part 2.
Dude! That's for all my friends at Empire Magazine. They know exactly, especially James Dyer. Especially for you, James Dyer, and Chris Hewitt. That's for you. Yeah, Dune! Dune Part 2. So, when we saw Wonka, as I recall, we did bump into some folks who had been working on, and very careful about how I go about this, had been working with Dune in some capacity, and they were incredibly, incredibly blown away by how good this movie is.
Really?
Yeah. And I've heard, now the first one's considered by many to be a masterpiece. Personally, and we've discussed this in great detail before, personally, I liked Dune very much. I like the soundtrack more. I mean, Hans, the band that Hans put together for that soundtrack. But this was really Hans's vision. Like, you can hear him just living his best life, going to town on the experimentation for this. And it worked so, so well. It was phenomenal. Phenomenal. I believe he got the Oscar for it. I might be wrong, but I definitely remember, wasn't there like that clip where he got woken up at 2 a.m. in his robe and given an Oscar? Anyway, point being, I think that was for Dune. So it's visionary in that Denis has Denis's probably the first person to do the book justice, because it's incredible.
Yes.
Like, it was considered David Lynch did a version, and there was a TV series as well, and a lot of people were warned it's unfilmable.
A lot of people have tried and not necessarily succeeded as they could have.
I was in that park where I get cold, dark stares from people because I said it's a solid 3. And the reason why I think it's a solid 3 is because I think there was a 5-star movie in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very big. And I think, remembering the book, it took a while to kind of hit the ground.
It's breathtaking. When you see sand here, imagine water. If you dive in, you can't reach the bottom.
You dive in?
Yes, it's called swimming.
I don't believe you.
In the shadows of Arrakis lie many secrets. But the darkest of them all may remain. The end of House Atreides.
My father didn't believe in revenge.
What if Paul Atreides were still alive?
fancy.
I understand. Nothing fancy.
I get that we needed to establish a lot of characters and so on and so forth, but I kind of feel like it could have moved just a little bit more quickly. I really loved it. I think visually it was probably the most stunning thing I've ever looked at, ever.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Cinematography point of view, everything from editing to performances, the cast, everything in there was just absolutely on point. I think my biggest issue with it was that it took something really pure and amazing and then drew it out really, it stretched it really, really wide. Like, I feel like only they did one small section of the book and stretched that out over 3 hours. That's kind of how I felt about it. That's not to say it's a terrible film. It's not at all. It's a very, very good film. And I often dance between a 3 and a 4-star rating for it. Because like I said, there's a 5-star movie in Dune. Dune Part 2, by many accounts, apparently, allegedly, is everything you love about the first movie dialed up to 120. So it's like they've got to the meat. Do you know what I mean? Like the Two Towers or The Empire Strikes Back or the middle part. It's got middle part syndrome. And syndrome seems negative. But what I mean by that is it's like, okay, we've got everything set up. Now we're in the middle. Let's just go for it and throw everything at the wall.
It feels a little bit like The Dark Knight to me, because a lot of people obviously sort of prefer Batman Begins over The Dark Knight, but The Dark Knight is like, it's peak, the peak of the mountain, isn't it? It's like, this is everything that we were leading to. And yeah, I agree with you. I think Dune Part 2 certainly feels like it's heading that way. I agree with you actually completely about the first film. I was expecting to absolutely be blown away with a 5 out of 5 movie and didn't feel that I got that. I am going to revisit part one before I see part two, obviously, to kind of refresh myself. But again, through seeing the trailer for part two, it's certainly enticed me back into the world and has made me excited to revisit it and kind of go back there. So, yeah, I mean, whilst I'm not a massive fan of the first one, it certainly intrigued me enough to dive back into that world without a shadow of a doubt.
And we are at the right time of the year to find the time to go back over the first one, to be fair.
Yes, exactly. So, as we head into Christmas, it's kind of literally the perfect time to find yourself a 3-hour slot during the day and pack everybody else off to do something else and sit down and watch it.
I think And also, like you say, just going back to your point, I think if you were one of these folks that really enjoyed every frame of the first one and thought it was amazing, I think the second one will just up the game for you and you'll enjoy this even more. And I think for those of us that were like, this has got potential and I really want it to go somewhere, I think it will really go there. And I think those of us that were slightly not less kind, because like I say, I've been very complimentary about everyone involved and the amount of work and hard effort and passion and love that's clearly gone into making this a masterpiece, or as close as near as damn it. I think when we get to this middle part, I think we're going to see that vision truly realized to its fullest potential. And you're right, I think it will be The Dark Knight, The Empire Strikes Back, The Godfather Part 2. I think this is Denis's masterpiece that we're about to witness and be involved with. For sure,
yeah, completely
for sure.
Agree. Right, so that comes out on March 1st of 2024.
Oh, we should have had it by now. We should have had it. It was supposed to be Christmas.
Now, the interesting thing about the next movie we're going to talk about, we're talking about a lot of sequels today, a lot of, the next sort of in the franchise and what have you. It's going to be interesting between the next two movies that we're going to talk about is which one you're more excited about. I'm more excited about this one. I think you're going to be more excited about the next one. So the film we're going to talk about now is Kung Fu Panda 4.
Yay!
It is time to take the next step on your journey.
I'm not going to be the dragon warrior anymore.
You will advance to spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace.
Inner peace.
Keep your surf off my turf!
Dinner, please. Dinner with peas in a sesame soy glaze.
This is not working at all.
Tai Lung, big fan.
Once I possess the kung fu of every master villain, no one will dare question my power.
Not even the great Dragon Warrior.
Who's that?
The most powerful shape-shifting sorceress, the Chameleon.
How do I find this, the Chameleon?
I'm gonna lead you right to her front door.
Yeah!
It was against an army.
Looking forward to this one. Looking forward to this one very much. So, I think we've sort of mentioned before the fact that, you know, when you're 4 or 5 films into a franchise series, you're not going to have, you know, a home run on every single one. But I don't think any single one of these Kung Fu Panda films dips below a 3, does it?
No, I literally, as we were saying before, I think that, like franchises of this size, some are better than others, of course, but they're all very, very enjoyable. I think Jack Black brings that energy to these films. This is so very much him. Like, I couldn't imagine anyone else voicing this character now at this point. I really enjoy this film. I love the scores for these films as well. I've had many great conversations with people like John Powell, for example, who scores these movies. I know Hans has been involved with these films. Funny, we were just literally talking about Hans and here we are again. But yeah, I from a music standpoint, they're actually some of my favourite animated scores to listen to as well. The Kung Fu Panda scores. So I'm a big fan, a big lover of Kung Fu Panda, and I'm always happy to see more of them. I think they're episodic as well. I think Kung Fu Panda is a franchise that when you see a sequel coming, it's not a franchise that you go, oh no, another one.
You
can watch them like episodic television, can't you? Except they're just really long, very heartwarming, very fun episodes. They're great for children. They're great for families. Especially, I imagine we'll clear at least one Kung Fu Panda over this season. For sure. Just, you know, over the Christmas period. There's just so much fun.
I mean, and the great thing is about, you know, like you say, so this is the fourth Kung Fu Panda, and quite often by the time you've hit this in a franchise series, for example, I'll say Hotel Transylvania, in the last one, Adam Sandler wasn't in it. But with this, you've got not only all of the original cast of Jack Black and Seth Rogen, Angelina Jolie, Jackie Chan, Lucy Liu, you've got an awesome cast that have come in as well. I mean, Awkwafina, who just has the most amazing voice, and she seems to be in every animation at the moment with absolutely good reason, because her voice is just like gold dust. It's superb. Ki-Hui Kwan is in this one, so that's great to see as well. Bryan Cranston's back, Ian McShane's back, of course, Dustin Hoffman, and James Hong as well, and Viola Davis. So, yeah, the voice cast in this is just fantastic, and just from the going of the trailer where Poe is being asked to kind of leave the dragon warrior behind now and step up to being spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace, he's struggling. He obviously struggled to become the dragon warrior for so long, and now he's struggling to actually leave it behind and take that next step onto the ladder. And is he going to be able to do it with all of the past villains and everything else like that? So it's going to be really good, and I'm very, very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I don't think there's anything more we need to say than that. We're excited for it. So yeah, definitely.
Right, now with the next movie, what I'm going to do, I'm going to intro it. I'm going to tell you what it is, and then I'm going to let you go.
Okay? I know where this is going.
Are you ready? The next trailer that was released in the film that we're going to talk about is Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so fine. I can talk about this now. I'm so happy.
I was about to say, the reason why I've done this, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Axlef, as I should call it.
Yeah, so this is the first time.
What you can say and what you can't say, so I'm going to kind of
leave it to it. No, so, yeah, well, we can talk about the trailer, because obviously the trailer's out now, and now I can tell you that Lorne Balfe is composing it, officially, on the record, and so we can talk about that. Now, from a music, so obviously I know, I'm excited for this from a music standpoint for obvious reasons. Number one, Axel F is one of the most iconic themes in films. And I'm trying to think, we'll come back around to this. Remember, we have to tell people that we're on Express FM on Boxing Day, right? But I think Axel F needs to factor into that.
Sorry,
yeah, for
yes,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so what the hell you were on about.
Tune in to Express FM, 6 p.m. If you're listening right now, and this is before Boxing Day, 6 p.m. Boxing Day, Express FM, tune in. Paul and I are going to play 3 hours of movie bangers, and I think Axel F should be in there. And
very
the reason
looking forward to that.
Yeah, and the reason for that is it's iconic to me. So I was interested in this because obviously, but growing up, Beverly Hills Cop was a film that one of those films, right, that we should definitely have not have seen, but we did see it when we were quite young. And Beverly Hills Cop, I love Beverly Hills Cop 2, not you, Beverly Hills Cop 3. But then, so yeah, this is a long time in the making. And I think many attempts have been made to get Beverly Hills Cop 4 going. I mean, this has been going on, by the way, since 1994. 2024. So when this eventually lands on Netflix in 2024, it would have been 30 years since Beverly Hills Cop 3, but also 30 years of trying to get this back on track, because it was going to be a movie and then it wasn't. And then I think Jerry Bruckheimer was no longer involved. And then it was with someone else. I think it was with Mace Newfield for the third one, and then someone else, and then someone else. And it was going to be another film, and then it was going to be a show. They shot an entire pilot that was never seen for a TV series, to continue it as a TV series. But Axel would kind of be, you know, when you see a lot of these spin-off shows, like they did it with Knight Rider, didn't they? It was about Knight Rider's son and stuff like that. But then, like, Hasselhoff appeared, spoiler alert, at various points. But yeah, it was going to be like that. Like, Axel F was, it was about his son, really, and this kind of stuff. So, but it never came to light. And so it's been on the back burner for many, many years. And finally, Jerry Bruckheimer's back involved. I'm assuming Paramount are fully behind it, because I think it's theirs. I'm not sure, but I know it's debuting exclusively on Netflix. Yeah, so Paramount have the Beverly Hills Cop franchise, so to speak, because Beverly Hills Cop 1, 2 and 3 are all Paramount. This is Netflix, so I'm not sure how that works. I don't know if it's like a Paramount Studios thing where it gets licensed to Netflix, or I do know that Netflix and only Netflix have it. I know Jerry Bruckheimer's back involved. I know that Eddie Murphy's back as Axel Foley, obviously. But the cool thing about this is having, like, Taggart and Rosewood back, right, from the original films. That's a
thing. Which is a nice touch. Again, similar to what we just said about Kung Fu Panda 4. It's a nice touch to have all of the originals alongside some great new actors as well. I mean, the fact that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in it is straight away piquing my interest.
Kevin Bacon's in this one as well. But we've also got a lot of faces back from the original first two films returning. So this is a real nostalgia trip. Now, I imagine, or I'm assuming, and maybe Lorne or Jerry Bruckheimer can put me straight on this, but I imagine this was probably inspired by the success of Top Gun Maverick. Because literally called Beverly Hills Cop Axel Foley, right? It's from the same studio. I kind of feel like there was a conversation somewhere, and we've said this before, where somebody went, Top Gun Maverick went really, really well. What else have we got from the 80s that would work just as well or as close as that? And so here we are. We've got Beverly Hills Cop back on our screens. I'm just happy for it. I'm so excited for it. Lorne,
Sorry to interrupt, John. Have you got any worries whatsoever?
Have I got any worries whatsoever?
About this film, because I do.
Oh, okay. So right now I don't, because I'm very excited about the direction of where it's going. I'm excited about the fact that, you know, this is a reunion. We know that reunions work from this particular studio or this production team. We know that worked with Top Gun Maverick. We know it worked very well. Lorne's on this, obviously. So from a musical point of view, Lorne worked on Top Gun Maverick with Harold Faltermeyer, like, really recently. Harold Faltermeyer, of course, famously, Axel F, probably one of his biggest, if not the biggest hit he ever produced. And so Lorne's now got that. So for a lot of us, it's like coming full circle, because I think Beverly Hills Cop was one of the first singles I ever bought, or the Axel F. And for Lorne, it was the first thing he learned how to play on the piano. So to be able to sort of be able to come full circle, here he is working on a Jerry Bruckheimer production, working again on a Harold Faltermeyer score, inspired score. I think from a musical point of view, this is a really integral and important moment for people like Lorne, the composer, but also music fans, certainly soundtrack fans. This is a really big deal that Lorne's taking the mantle of this role. From a film perspective, yeah, of course, there are going to be people with questions and hopes, fears, doubts. You know what I mean?
I'm going to throw two spanners into it. And these are the two things that I'm worried about.
Go for it.
Is Coming to America. Okay. The sequel, Coming to America, was awful. Like, really, just truly, truly, truly bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, Eddie Murphy and his later career is so hit and miss. I mean, you know, Coming to America, which again was a big sequel after many, many years, and it was really, really bad. However, My Name is Dolomite, which of course came to Netflix a few years ago, which went very under the radar, but was absolutely superb. So you just never know what Eddie Murphy you're going to get when you see a new Eddie Murphy movie. My other slight concern is the director, Mark Molloy, who, as far as I can tell, is his first major movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a terrible thing. You know, Jewel was Spielberg's first major movie, although an argument could be made.
That's a big comparison.
But an argument could be made that Jaws was his first major movie. But, you know, my point is, Star Wars was Lucas's first ever movie.
I understand that.
Everyone's got to start somewhere, man.
But they were all like the first of those franchises. This is a big franchise that's already there that has a lot to go with it. To have a first-time director, as far as I can kind of see, Mark has done some bits and pieces with Apple and some promo bits and pieces with them. I don't really see that he's done too much other stuff. That's, of course, not to say that he's not incredibly talented and, you know, has been doing bits and pieces under the radar for all I know. I have absolutely no idea. But it just, that's one of my sort of concerns, that this is going to be a first-time director and this is a big project.
Well, we say this all the time. The jury's still out, right? We don't know. We're not. I mean, only the people working on the film right now could know that. And I'm sure they're all very, very proud of it, as they should be. I would say two things on this. One, I haven't seen anything of his to judge it against. So I don't know how that's going to turn out. However, I pride myself on giving everyone a go first time round and giving them a fair swing. And I think, as I say, jury's still out. Till we've seen it, we don't know. I'm expecting good things from it. I also understand that I'm not quite sure how this works in terms of whether or not Mark's now made a completely different movie or he's taken the baton from. So he's, as I understand it, the two guys that were in the frame were the guys that directed Bad Boys for Life. Which
now,
worked out very well.
That. Yeah, it's funny you should mention that because I really got Bad Boys for Life vibes from this trailer.
Exactly. And I think those boys were involved. And sadly, I think they went off to do Batgirl, which is the reason why they couldn't do this, which is a real shame. A real shame,
right,
because
okay.
Not only would their version of Beverly Hills Cop be amazing, but their version of Batgirl is probably outstanding and we'll never get to see it. However, so I think it might still, I don't know, again, I don't know any of this for sure, but I kind of feel like he's taking it over from them and it may have their DNA or their fingerprints on it, and that would make it very good. But if you're already saying that Bad Boys for Life is the vibe you get from this trailer, that tells me Mark's come in and gone, okay, here's what we have, let's evolve and
let's
adapt this. And and why wouldn't he? Because they're great directors. I love those
guys.
Yeah,
absolutely, 100%.
So I've got high hopes. I've got high hopes for it. And again, just sorry, going back to what you were saying about, this could be coming to America. I don't think that's the case. Number one, because this is coming from Jerry Bruckheimer. And also, I think that there's a lot of, like you say, Beverly Hills Cop team involved for this to not just run away with itself, right? So there we go. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's out in the summer of 2024.
Summer 2024, no release date as of yet. Right, so to look at our very last trailer, we did say it was very trailer-heavy today. Our very last trailer is If, with Ryan Reynolds, directed and written by John Krasinski.
Yes, John Krasinski does a movie that he's, as far as I can tell, this is a family film. A movie...
Again, we can only go on the trailer, and I've let my kids watch the trailer, and I would say, yes, it is. It seems to be quite family-friendly.
This is the awesome thing. Now, see... John Krasinski writing and directing a movie that his children can watch is not only just the most incredible, sweetest thing ever, but also I get a really strong vibe that when someone says to me, John Krasinski's made a family film, I'm like, I'm okay with that.
Oh,
I just feel like it's in very safe hands. And then to get Ryan to be the lead.
Yes, yes. I mean, the trailer's fantastic.
Steve Carell's one of the...
Oh, he's the main voice. Yeah. So if you haven't seen the trailer, I'll very, very quickly let you know that... It's about a young girl who's going through a difficult experience, and then she starts to see everybody's imaginary friends, which is what the IF stands for, imaginary friends, and they've all been left behind as their real life friends have all grown up. And then her dad kind of explains to her that this is what we do, and it just looks really, really interesting. And the lineup of both physical actors in the movie and voices as well is just honestly next level. I mean, John Krasinski seems to, everything he turns his hand to is just fantastic. It's just really a work of art, you know. And then to have Ryan Reynolds, who again seems to be the man with the golden touch, you know, like you say, Steve Carell is a voice, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is a voice.
Is Awkwafina in this as well?
Yes, she is. Yes,
she's doing well.
She's very, very certainly of the moment. Sam Rockwell
Yes.
And then actually acting in this is the young girl is played by Kaylee Fleming, who, again, from the trailer, appears to be very, very good. You've also got Emily Blunt, Matt Damon, John Stewart, which would be interesting, Vince Vaughn. So, yeah, it's a real, real packed cast. And it looks to be certainly very much a real fun family film. Sort of, you know, if you think about Free Guy, for example, how fun that was. Then I think this stunning. Is going to be following along that path.
Hi.
Well, looky, looky.
She is the perfect fit, I promise.
Did she even see you?
She was about to.
What are you doing? Don't do this.
Hi.
Oh, God.
So it starts.
This is just so exciting.
What is happening?
Well, that's a perfectly understandable question given numb.
I'm an if. Get it? Imaginary friend. Our kids grew up.
So we need new ones.
You could save all of us.
All of who? And don't say ifs.
Let him say it, or I think his head may actually explode.
Fine.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think so. And also, I think the rule of thumb generally is that anything with Sam Rockwell in gets upped by 2 stars automatically, doesn't it?
Yes.
That's the general rule of thumb.
He's just phenomenal. So,
I'm all in.
Too long to wait on that one.
All our favourite people.
That is coming. Yes, that's coming at May 2024, so not long to wait on that one. Very excited about that. Very, very much looking forward to that.
Excellent. Yeah, sign me up.
So there you go. Five trailers reviewed, five films that we're really, really looking forward to.
Our Christmas special is all trailers. Let's celebrate the close of the year by talking about everything that we want to look at next year. That's what we've done. That's essentially what I've done. Yeah, this is how we've celebrated 2023. By telling you about 2024. Anywho.
I just love that cinema is in such a good place, and it's fantastic, because all we've heard for the last 5 years is how cinema is in decline and everything else. And it just proves it's not. It just proves that there's so much great stuff out there.
I really want Beverly Hills Cop 4 to go to the cinema. I want them to change their thinking on that. Please, Netflix, you have the capacity to put things in the cinema first. You do. And they have done. It's a great success, by the way, in the past. All Quiet on the Western Front, anyone? Please consider it for the cinema. Please.
So keeping it back into 2023, this is what's coming out of the cinemas very soon, certainly over the Boxing Day and holiday period. You've got Cats in the Museum, which is a cartoon, which is, I believe, originally Russian. So that's been dubbed into English, and that's in cinemas. Speaking of that, you've got The Boy and the Heron, which is the latest Studio Ghibli absolutely smash huge film.
Yeah, that's coming to the UK finally.
You can
finally.
Watch that with the original, or you can watch it subtitled. And if you want to watch it in dubbed, which I believe obviously a lot of people will do, but if you want to watch it in dubbed, this is the voice list that you're going to have in that movie. You're going to have Christian Bale, Dave Bautista, Willem Dafoe, Mark Hamill, Robert Pattinson, and Florence Pugh.
Oh, now I kind of want to watch both versions.
Exactly. Yeah, you can do. You just go and watch both versions, because it sounds fantastic.
Yeah. There we go. Okay, Boy in the Heron.
You have the latest Taika Waititi movie called Next Goal Wins.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, starring Michael Fassbender, and is supposedly a riot, but haven't seen that one as of yet. The new Ferrari movie featuring Adam Driver, Penelope Cruz, and Shailene Woodley, which again is early doors but getting quite good reviews. So looking forward to that one.
29th of December that's coming. Cinemas first, then Sky Cinema. And also I chatted to Daniel Pemberton, a composer, about it. If you can look around the internet, you can see that conversation somewhere. But he talked a little bit about Ferrari and what to expect from it. It's not a racing movie. It's a very much a integral drama about grief and love and loss, and about the man. And there is some racing in the third act. So there you go.
Okay. And then finally, Anyone But You, starring Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell.
It looks interesting to me. I'm trying to think of the other rom-com that it reminded me a lot of. Mind you, how many rom-coms are there where they start where they hate each other and they're obviously going to get together?
There are a lot of those, but it seems to have a little bit of... what's the word I'm looking for? It has a little bit of almost nastiness about it. Almost...
yeah.
What was the Ryan Phillippe, Reese Witherspoon, Sarah
Oh,
Michelle
Cruel
Gellar.
Intentions.
Cruel Intentions.
Anybody that was in their teens or their 20s in the 90s and the 2000s does definitely... I don't know what that timeline was about. But anyone that certainly any fella that was of an age during that time... can remember the name of that movie and Wild Things.
Oh, yes. What a great film. Great film. But, of course, starring Glenn Powell, who, since Top Gun Maverick, I think he's been in a couple of bits and pieces, but hasn't really kind of had the leading role that I've been expecting from him. So this could be, you know, the breakout film for him. And, of course, Sydney Sweeney, who is, let's face it, over every Instagram post and every picture across the internet right now for many different reasons. So... again, it's certainly going to be on my watch list, and I'll be looking forward to seeing it.
Glenn's great. He's great, laugh. A great yeah. I interviewed him a couple of times. He's great. He's superb. I think it's one of these films where he looks like he literally lived his best life making it.
Yes.
So, yeah, why not? Have fun at work and get paid.
The dream, it's the dream.
Yeah, it is.
So one film to talk about that has literally just come out, which I went to see, is Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, everyone's talking I'm really hyped for it. I still haven't seen it yet. I'm going to go check that out because I've got an Aquaman screening. So we will talk about Aquaman probably on the other side of the festive period. We'll come back and do a recap. I think are we going to do a top 5 2023 when we come back?
We will do, yeah. So yeah. Early heads up on that one if you're thinking to yourself, well, if this is your last episode of 2023, why aren't you doing a top 5 or a top 10 of your films? Well, we'll do that when we come back on, first, second week of January, whenever it is we come back, we'll do our top films of 2023.
Let's wait for the year to end and then we can truly do a 2023, can't
well,
we?
Well, yes, yeah, exactly. We've literally just named, three or four films there that could all quite easily make the top 10. So
I'm not sure about Aquaman, but we'll see. The jury's still out. But yeah, so I'm going to go check Aquaman out. A screening of that, and then I'll grab Godzilla while I'm there. I'm not literally grab Godzilla. Have you seen the size of it?
Well,
but you did.
You might be able to.
You saw it. Yeah, come on, tell me.
So Godzilla Minus One is a Japanese production. That's the first thing that we should say. It is not part of, for example, the Godzilla and Kong
legacy
from America. It's not part of that world.
Monarch. That's it.
Yeah, it's not that. I believe it is. I'm trying to think who produced it. It's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't remember.
It's not James Wan, is it?
Anime.
Anime. The, oh, right. So it's from manga?
Manga, yes.
Not manga.
Anime.
Anime.
Is there an actual company called Anime?
Yeah, Anime Limited.
Yes, so it is actually from anime then. That's, yeah, there I knew you go. I was getting my point there eventually. So it is actually from them. It's set in post-war Japan, which is literally, obviously, as you can imagine, at the lowest point in its existence for a long time. Mm. And just as Japan is getting itself back onto its feet and starting to, you know, rise again after, you know, being destroyed during the war, Godzilla comes along and he decides to make things a little bit more worse for them and crushes everything again. And of course, this time Godzilla has decided that he also harvests, you know, some sort of atomic power in here where he can just... heat ray everything that he feels he wants to.
That's as Godzilla should be, right? I think he was always he was the result, wasn't he, of
Godzilla's
atomic energy.
Right to do.
Yeah, he was atomic. That was kind of the point, wasn't it?
There are so many great things about this movie, but I like the fact that it's far more in keeping with the original Japanese movie. Now, I would lie if I told you that I'd seen any of the Godzilla movies from the 40s and 50s and 60s, because I haven't. But I do have seen enough, you know, film history and other bits and pieces to know how it started and how everything came along and all that. So it's far more in keeping with the Japanese versions of those movies, the Japanese culture, rather than, you know, the new American side of things. It's far more in keeping with all of that. Which, again, I really, really enjoyed. I very much enjoyed that side of things. And the other thing that I really enjoyed is, as with any good monster movie, in my opinion, the movie shouldn't be about the monster. The monster should almost be a subplot that is just kind of going around terrorizing thing. The actual movie and the heart and soul of the movie is about relationships. Now, I mentioned this to you when I came out, and the fact that there is a lot of this movie that reminds me of Jaws.
Yeah.
Because Jaws is my favorite movie of all time. Now, so as much as Godzilla is going around destroying lives and destroying Japan and everything else like that, the main focus of the film is about the relationships, about, you know, coming out of the war, trying to reclaim your lives and trying to, you know, pick up the pieces and all the terror that they've had and everything else like that, and trying to move on and making really, really hard decisions. And as well as doing all of that, you've now got this other evil that's coming in and kind of destroying everything. So that was what I really, really enjoyed about it. Was, again, you know, we spoke about this in Five Nights at Freddy's, you've got your main plot line, and it's actually the secondary plot line, which is the one that really grabs you, and it does very, very well. Yeah, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I thought it borrowed enough from other great films to make it fantastic. I mentioned Jaws. I think there are elements of Dunkirk in there as well. I should mention, and I could be completely wrong on this, so I apologize if I am, I believe the budget of this movie, for a movie of this size, I believe the budget was around about $15 million.
Wow.
Which, if you've seen the trailer, if you've seen the movie, you'll know is just such a feat, because when you make this type of a movie in America, you're talking hundreds of millions.
Wow.
So, yes, there are a certain few scenes that maybe fall ever so slightly short and they don't quite look on point, but I'm 100% nitpicking. I really, really am just nitpicking at that. Overall, it is just a triumph. It really is a triumph. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It is definitely going to be in my top 10 of the year. I would highly, highly recommend that you go and see this. Of course, there are subtitled versions. There are
dubbed.
Dubbed is the word I'm looking for. There are dubbed versions, so you can choose whichever one you want to go and see. I would give this one a really, really fantastic 4.5 out of 5.
Oh, that's close. That's very close. I like that. I reckon I'm going to lean into a 5 by the sounds of it, but we'll see.
It's a very, very special movie. It's a very special movie.
Yeah, I like that. Sorry, going back to what you were saying about that kind of balance between, because there are Godzilla movies that are entirely Godzilla centric, right? And there's not enough about what's going on around sometimes. There's not enough about, you know, characters, and but sometimes it goes in the other direction where there is a lot of focus. I'm not going to name any names, but there is a lot of focus on characters and companies and corporations and nefariousness going on around Godzilla's arrival, but not necessarily enough of Godzilla. So we've had extremes where we've had either too much Godzilla and not enough anything else, or too much of everything else and not enough Godzilla. But this, by the sounds of it, gets that balance right.
Yeah, 100%. And I've always said, you know, this isn't a horror film, but you think about some of the greatest horror films, like, for example, Jaws, like Alien, you know, the actual monster is not the selling point. You take The Thing, for example, the actual monster is not the selling point. The selling point is the drama between the people that revolve around the monster. And that's exactly what this is. You know, I can't speak highly enough of it. It's just very, very, very good.
That is in cinema. I think it's in cinemas. I hope it continues to run over the holiday season. I'm sure you can check it out in theatres across the world and in cinemas here in the UK. Godzilla Minus One. Please stand up and take a big roar of a bow. Excellent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And then looking a little bit closer to home, we're going to look at streaming. Mm-hmm. The other big release was Chicken Run Dawn of the Nuggets.
And just before actually you move on to that, sorry, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom will be out, I think, by the time you listen to this. It's got a midweek release, of course, because it's Christmas week, right? So Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom with Jason Momoa and Patrick Wilson, directed by James Wan. That's a DC Comics film. That's part of the DCEU, not the DCU or the Elseworlds. That is in cinemas and theatres by the time you hear this, I think. So that's the Christmas big drop from the comic world. But yes, sorry, what's going on at home?
So on streaming, we've got Netflix, Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget, which is a sequel to Chicken Run, a mere 23 years after the original.
Just a few years after the original. Yeah.
Just a mere 23 years.
But then saying that, it's been 30 years since Beverly Hills Cop 3, so...
Well, there you go, yes. Yeah exactly. So, if you haven't seen Chicken Run, what have you been doing with your life? You absolutely should have seen Chicken Run. Such a great original movie. But if you haven't seen Chicken Run, it was basically about a bunch of chickens in a chicken farm wanting to break out. And that was originally Mel Gibson playing Rocky and Julia Swahala playing Ginger. And I hate to spoil a 23-year-old movie, but here it comes. They broke out.
It's like Watership Down, except with chickens and not as scary or traumatic or requiring any therapy.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. So this time around, Mel Gibson and Julia Swahala have been replaced. They have been replaced by Zachary Levi and Tandwi Newton. Don't know why. No idea why, but they do a sterling job. And you, unless you are an avid fan of the original, you don't really notice
it. The Julia Swahala thing, I think, was there was a massive whole thing going on outside of that, wasn't there, about how I think again, don't quote me, but the rumor that I read somewhere was that they sounded too old now.
Well, that makes sense. Like I say,
that's what she was. That's what I think she was. Yeah, I think she was rallying, and of course that creates a whole other topic for a whole other podcast about the fact that shouldn't be a thing. But anyway, I mean, I don't think we need to go too far into why Mel Gibson wouldn't be back.
No, possibly not.
But again, all very controversial, all very political, I thought. I'd heard all these different things. However, we do now have Zach Levi and we do now have Tandwi Newton. So that's a good thing because they're great and I love them.
Yes, 100%. And this is a strange thing. So in reality, it's been 23 years since the original. However, when you get to the film, you don't really know, but I would say somewhere between 6 months to maybe a year has passed. It hasn't been too long.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's pretty much straight away. And Rocky and Ginger now have a daughter called Molly. And we see over the course of a montage, we see Molly grow up from a chick to a chickling or whatever you want to say. I don't have no idea. But then, as with all young children, as any parents will know, they start to find their own feet and they want to be a little bit independent. And doesn't matter how much Rocky and Ginger tell her that it's a very scary and dangerous world out there and they try to protect her, Molly wants to go out and discover it. And ironically, I'm not kind of giving away any spoilers here because it is any type of trailer, Molly gets herself into a chicken farm. So after spending the whole of Chicken Run trying to break out of a chicken farm, they're now trying to break into a chicken farm.
That sounds cool.
Yes, it is. It's. Listen, if you like Nick Park, if you like the Wallace and Gromit films, if you like the original Chicken Run, you are going to like this. That's all there is to it. It's a really, really enjoyable family film. It's on Netflix. You can watch it all the way over Christmas. It's something that your family will sit down to watch for 2 hours and just really enjoy as a family. And that's all there is to it. You don't need to overthink these films. You don't need to overanalyze them. It's just a couple of hours of fun. Like I say, you've got some of the original cast still in there. You've got the likes of Jane Horrocks and Imelda Staunton still in there. You've got some newer voices like Ramesh Ranganathan, Peter Serafinowicz and Nick Mohammed are all in this one this time around alongside Zach and Tandwi as well. So, yeah, I've read some reviews that were saying it was better than the original. For me, no, I would say it's very much like of a likeness. You know, they're very much on par with each other. But quite simply, if you enjoyed the previous film, the original Chicken Run, you're going to enjoy The Dawn of the Nugget. There are a lot of very, very funny moments on there. It's absolutely phenomenal animation. You know, the fact that it's all stop motion and not CGI at all, it's just really, really great. It's really, really enjoyable. And if you've got a family, or even if you don't have a family, put it on, you'll enjoy it, I promise. And I would give that one a really solid 3.5 out of 5.
Oh, I like that. There we go. Harry Gregson-Williams, by the way, for all our Scoreheads friends, Harry Gregson-Williams back on scoring duties as well. So if the music sounds familiar, you'll know why. Same composer. There you go. There you go. Right.
Right.
Oh, so, can I very quickly, sorry, can I just mention, as you're on the subject of streaming, Reacher Season 2 is now on Amazon Prime Video. Not all of it. I think you're having it staged to you over the course of weeks, but you can get Reacher Season 2, or Reacher Season 2 is now playing on Amazon Prime Video. That's definitely one to watch over the festive season if you really enjoyed the first season, which was amazing. So yeah, check that out, Amazon Prime Video.
Now, looking at our Blu-rays, DVDs, etc., obviously the week before Christmas, you're not really going to have too much come out because most of it has all come out at the start of December ready for Christmas. However, there are a couple of bits and releases that we can talk about. You've got Cobra Series 1 to 3, which is coming out on Blu-ray and DVD. You've got a Chucky Collected Limited Edition coming out on 4K Blu-ray.
That looks sensational, by the way. Yeah, if you're a fan of horror or you're a fan of Chucky, that box set is the way forward. Obviously, you can't see it because this is audio, but I know, Paul, you could probably see it in front of you at the moment. It is stunning.
Looks very good.
It looks very cool. Yeah, if you're a horror fan.
Like you say, any horror fan, any Chucky fan, that will be on their Christmas list without a shadow of a doubt. Speaking of that, Doctor Who, the 60th anniversary specials are out on Blu-ray and DVD as well. Obviously, a lot going around with Doctor Who at the moment. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio is out on Criterion Collection, which, of course, is 4K and Blu-ray as well. Bit of a sleeper hit, that one, really, wasn't it? Well-respected, but it sort of didn't really blow up for some reason.
There's one that might not be on your list there yet. I've just thought, because I've literally just been sent information. I love how off the cuff that was. Literally, as we were talking, I had some information through. So Seven is getting its finally. I thought this was going to happen for the 30th anniversary. Or is it? I suppose it is. 2020. Seven was 1995, wasn't it? The original Seven. David Fincher.
Yes, 95. It was,
So 2025 would be the 30th, right? If my math is correct. There we go. So this, on the 30th, so depending on when you listen to this, on the 30th of December, there is a 4K... Finally, there is a 4K remastered edition of Seven, which will be available to all those of you that love your 4K like I do. However, it does come in an incredibly sensational... I've only seen this on Zavvi so far. Other retailers are available, but so far on Zavvi, I've seen... You can pre-order it now, by the way. This beautiful, stunning box set where the 4K comes in like a... You know, it looks like a... The box is like a wrapped-up piece of car... Like, you know, a parcel where the string around it and all the blood across it and stuff. But it comes with the original cinema poster inside it, and there's some art cards. I think there's even, like... John Doe's diary in there and all this kind of notebook.
Oh, wow.
And
all,
yeah, like they've gone to town on this, man. It looks absolutely stunning. Seven 4K collector's edition finally available from the 30th of December. I mean, for me, that's definitely going to be my pick for this edition of the podcast, I think.
Been a good boy? Do you think that somebody will bring you that for Christmas?
They'll have a job. It comes out on the 30th.
Oh, maybe a late Christmas present then.
So unless Warner Brothers have had a word with Santa,
I don't know.
But we'll see. That is coming from Warner Brothers, of course, because it's New Line Cinema. But yeah, so maybe Warner Brothers have had a word with Santa. We'll see by the
you
end.
Never
of
know.
It. We'll see by the end of the week, won't we? If I keep saying it, hey Warner Brothers, do you know Santa? If you do, I'm sure you do, because I'm sure many of your products are on many children's wish lists. Not Seven though, hopefully. Hopefully. There we go. That'll be weird, won't it? Santa dropping a Seven box set down a six-year-old child's chimney. Very, very odd choice. Don't recommend watching that one with the family round the Christmas dinner table.
No, that is definitely not a Christmas morning movie.
It's definitely after all the kids have gone to bed.
Evening movie,
Mum and Dad are going to watch this. Yeah, with a nice sherry now. Yeah, for sure. But what a film. An absolute classic. A five-star, one of the greatest serial killer movies ever made, if not the greatest serial killer movie ever made. I am really excited about this. You're right, though. I am a little bit upset that it's not out. Because I 100% would have got that for myself as a gift. But yes, Warner Brothers, if you're listening, please give Santa a shout before this Sunday. It would be really, really nice to wake up to that on a Monday. What's in the box? Anyway.
Oh, what's in the
right,
box?
Yeah, yeah. So let's...
Right, so just very quickly to finish off with the Blu-rays and DVDs. We've got RoboDoc, which is the creation of RoboCop.
Oh, yeah.
That would be very interesting to see. The Flash 4K Steelbook is out. The Miracle Club Blu-ray and DVD. And a Titanic 4K is out.
Yeah,
as well.
It is. Oh, look at that. Paul, you're shaking up the stakes now, mate. He's shaking up the stakes. The 4K Ultra HD Titanic could be the DVD of the week.
That's got to be a special one.
It also comes in a special box set. I mean, the special box set is quite pricey, but it is absolutely stunning for what you get inside it. Again, it's full of all these amazing bits and pieces that really, you know, if you're a fan, like, it's a pretty serious deal. But yeah, I think Titanic and Seven are definitely on my Christmas list for sure.
On the wish list.
Yeah.
Right, we are almost at the end of the pod.
Yeah, we are.
And it is time to talk about our big feature this week that you have just so many people been getting in touch. So it's time for our tip top five Christmas movies.
We're going to need a bigger pod. Tip top five.
Okay. How are we doing this? Am I going first again?
Yeah, you're going first. Of course you are.
Completely off the cuff. All right. So, as always, I don't prepare a top five. I call the first five from my head because, as we always say, if they're still in my head, they're probably the ones that resonated most with me over the years. Mine's probably not going to be traditional in the traditional sense because I, as I've explained to you many, many times over the last couple of episodes, I tend to watch Christmas adjacent films as opposed to Christmas films.
We've had a few comments on this, of course, from our listeners, haven't we, about what, you know, is it a traditional Christmas movie? Is it not a traditional Christmas movie? So the irony is you're going to go for five movies that are not traditional Christmas movies. They are Christmas adjacent. And I'm going to do the complete opposite. And I'm actually going to go for five Christmas movies that are genuine Christmas
movies. I think the five films I really enjoy returning to each Christmas, no matter what, like, that list changes, doesn't it, from year to year?
Yes.
It can depend on time, it can depend on capacity, it can depend on what's available, of course. But I think the five most consistent that always come back around every Christmas without fail, and they'll all get a watching absolutely no matter what, for me, in no particular order, Home Alone is in there without a shadow of any doubt. That's always in there every year without fail. Die Hard's always in there every year without fail. That's two. Okay, you're queuing me in. I like that. Even on Zoom, he's keeping me queued. Gremlins is always in there without fail. But also, Lethal Weapon, every year without fail. And I'm going to say, one more. What do I watch every year without fail? I'm going to go with Batman Returns. So there we go. That's five. Yeah, five.
There you go. That's your five.
They're not your traditional, are they? I mean, Home Alone's pretty traditional. But
no, I mean, there are a lot of films that I watch every single year that are not technically Christmas films. I mean, I watch Mary Poppins and Oliver every single year. But
yeah,
it's not a Christmas movie. But, you know, we do sit down and watch them every single year without a shadow of a doubt.
Mm.
Right. So my five, this is in no particular order. I did think about putting them in order, but it's not. It's in no particular order.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start at the bottom, and I'm going to start with Fat Man.
Ah, it's interesting. I've never seen it.
It's really, really good. If you haven't seen it, it's Mel Gibson who plays Santa, and he's just an ordinary Joe. Being Santa is just another job. So he literally goes to the post office, he picks up the letters, he does all of these bits and pieces. It's just another job. He works in a factory that does all of these toys. And there is a young boy who is not particularly happy because he's on the naughty list. And he's got a rich dad or something like that. I can't remember. And basically he hires, I believe, John Leguizamo to assassinate Santa. And it's just a brilliant, really entertaining film. And I love it.
Isn't John also in Violent Night as well?
Maybe I'm getting those two confused. In fact, it's not John Leguizamo, it's Walter Goggins.
There we go. But both very good actors, by the way.
Both very good, yes. And like you say, John Leguizamo in Violent Night is just as good.
I omitted Violent Night because I really, really like Violent Night, but I've only ever seen it once. So I don't think it would make the top five in that respect. I think the top five is really for films we're watching a lot, you know?
So I think my other top four films are all self-explanatory, to be completely honest with you. So Jim Carrey's The Grinch, although I do love the original as well. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, that we will watch without a shadow of a doubt a day or two before Christmas Day. Elf, which of course we can get to a little bit later in the show. We can talk about what we're doing with Elf.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I literally just watched it a couple of days ago, Home Alone, which is just, you know, you don't even have to talk about it. It's one of the greatest Christmas films ever. So that is our top five, tip-top five Christmas movies of all time. So let's get to our listeners' choices.
The We're Gonna Need a Bigger Pod listeners' choices.
Right then, here we go. Here are your choices, your tip top five choices. Now, I will say before we start on this, we got a lot in this week.
Did you get them all?
This is what I was going to say. I think I've got them all.
I just realised because we're doing this remotely this time, I have all the screens. So
you have the
I do. I have all the screens.
I will try and get through as many as what I've got. I think I've got them all. If I haven't got them all, I desperately apologize. So here we go. So on X, Harry, who is Mellow Matters on X, said, about a boy, Christmas Evil, which I don't know that one.
Ooh.
Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, which almost made my list. Batman Returns and Home Alone. That's Harry's top five. Great.
Well
top
done.
Five.
Well done. Any Batman Returns people, you are my people.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because up next is Wayne Johnston. He said, and I could listen, Wayne, I completely 100% agree with you here. He said, I feel I've had to do two lists here. One for the ridiculous notion that any film set during Christmas time is a Christmas film, and one for actual Christmas movies. Now, I don't think it's a ridiculous notion, but if you'll notice with my films, I went for actual Christmas movies, whereas Die Hard is a film that we watch every single Christmas Eve. That's like mine and my wife's tradition. But I didn't include it in my top five. Okay, so this is his not really Christmas films top five. Number five, Trading Places, fantastic. Four, Gremlins. Three, Die Hard 2. Two, Lethal Weapon. And number one, Die Hard. His actual Christmas films top five. Number five is Home Alone 2. Number four is The Santa Claus. Number three is Home Alone. Number two is Scrooged. And number one is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yeah. Good choice.
Just brilliant. I just love it.
Yeah.
Right, Noel, who has a fantastic name, by the way. Noel on Facebook. In no particular order, Home Alone, The Bishop's Wife, which I don't know, Christmas Lights featuring Robson Green, which I don't know, It's a Wonderful Life, and last but not least, The Clash of the Santas.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Very interesting list. Yeah. Do you know what? You're reminding me of some things I haven't seen in a while. Like, It's a Wonderful Life, I haven't seen in time, but it's one of the greatest films.
I love It's a Wonderful Life.
Ever, mate. Yes. This is the thing. So when I went, I'm remembering things now. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's pretty perfect. That's pretty perfect. But as I said to you, it's the first five that came to mind, because that's the five I watch most often. Yeah. Doesn't mean to say that It's a Wonderful Life isn't great. It is phenomenal and probably better than anything on my list, actually. But yeah, it's a film I don't watch too often, which is why.
I don't watch it often. I probably watch it every few years, but it is absolutely beautiful. Mm. Ali McNiff, he says, again, here goes in no particular order. Number one, Arthur Christmas. Number two, Die Hard. Number three, The Reindeer Games. Number four, Love Actually. And number five, The Holiday. And The Holiday almost made my top five as well.
Just for those of us listening in the United Kingdom, Reindeer Games was called Deception here. It's with Ben Affleck.
It was
Gary Sinise and Charlize Theron, I think. Yeah, so that was originally called Reindeer Games everywhere, but here it was called Deception. I quite like it. I mean, it's awful, but in the best possible way. It's enjoyably bad. Anyway,
it's quite funny to see Love Actually in a top five there, because I read something recently about how actually horrifically awful everybody is to each other in Love Actually. When you actually think about it, it's all people not being nice to each other and cheating on each other and so all that sort of stuff. You go, isn't it a wonderful Christmas film?
Is it Hate Actually then? Well, no, not Hate. That's a really strong word.
No.
Then is it not Love Actually? What's the word I'm looking for? Not Love Actually. It's
promiscuous.
Promiscuous Activity. That sounds like a very different film. That sounds like a moody spin-off of the horror genre. Promiscuous Activity. Is that the porn name for Paranormal Activity? Anyway, right. Come on, off the beaten track. Let's go. Move back to where we were.
So here we go for the big one. Simon Bruce, we apologise for not putting yours in last week, Simon. But Simon Bruce is tip top five for Christmas. So in reverse order, number five, Miracle on 34th Street from 1994. Number four, Trading Places. Number three, The Snowman. Number two, Gremlins. And number one, Die Hard.
Ooh.
Another Die Hard at number one. Cal Coker at number five, Muppets Christmas Carol. Number four, Elf. Number three, Love Actually. Number two, The Night Before Christmas. And number one, Home Alone. Julia Minty, who says, Merry Christmas to you both. So Merry Christmas, Julia.
Merry Christmas, Julia.
She says, in no particular order, Elf, Scrooge, Last Christmas, Gremlins, and Home Alone. Simon Tier says, Love Actually, A Muppet's Christmas Carol, The Grinch, Die Hard, and Last Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Thomas, in reverse order, number five, The Santa Claus, the movie. Number four, Elf. Number three, Violent Night. Number two, Muppet's Christmas Carol. Number one, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
And very finally, in no particular order, Danielle Tanner has said, It's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, Love Actually, Last Christmas, and finally The Polar Express. And she finishes it off with Die Hard will never be a Christmas movie.
Wow. Well. Well then.
Always polarizing opposition, that one, isn't it?
No, well then. Well, it is, but anyway. So, yes. Thank you. Any more?
That's it as far as what I have. If I've missed anything, I really do apologise. We've tried to keep abreast of everything.
I've took a sneaky look. We tried to keep a turkey abreast of everything. We tried to have a little sneaky little look there while you were reading out just to make sure I'd read everybody's or got everybody's or not missed anyone's that you maybe didn't have. But there we go. No, that's everyone's. Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you so much for
Merry
that.
Merry Christmas, absolutely. Thank you so much for staying with us for the year and rejoining us and coming back whenever you can and all that sort of stuff. So
or coming back whenever we did.
Whenever we could. Yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much. We really do truly appreciate it. So this is going to be the last one for 2023. We will be back in 2024. And when we return in 2024, we will be doing our top 10 movies of 2023, and of course we invite you, which we will post over the Christmas period, we invite you to tell us your tip top five movies of 2023, and that will be our first tip top five of 2024.
There you go. So prepare your notes now, do your watchings, do as you will for the rest of the year up to the 31st, because that's when actually the year ends, and that's where kind of the gate closes on deciding what is the best film in 2023. But by all means, give us your tip top five films of 2023. We'll be having those in. That's your homework for the Christmas holidays.
There's your homework. Expect it in on time.
We expect it in on time, yeah. But thank you very much. Thank you to you, Paul. Thank you to Simon Bruce for his excellent work behind the scenes on making sure this all sounds great and also getting out on time, because leaving me to get anything out on time is an absolute nightmare. But thankfully, we have Schoolmaster Simon Bruce to make sure everything is all in order. Thank you to you for listening. As always, thank you to our friends at The View Cinema in Gunwolf Keys down here in Portsmouth. You can find your nearest view at myview.com. And thank you to Express FM Studios for my studio this week.
Yeah, just for your studio. Express, I couldn't give a monkey's.
So thank you very much, because this one was available. Although it is very warm, I am definitely melting, and I fancy myself now a nice hot chocolate and some of those quality streets. Other chocolates are available. Merry Christmas, Paul.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, John. Just remember, if you are listening to this episode literally within a second or two of it dropping, we are at the South Sea Cinema. If you're local to Portsmouth, we're at the South Sea Cinema on Friday, the 22nd of December. We are hosting a Elf screening, aren't we? There's a screening you and I. We're going to talk a little bit about the film and our favorite Christmas films and everything else like that.
Yes, it's a
listener's choice for Express FM. So come on down to the South Sea Cinema for 6 p.m. Book your tickets now if you haven't done it already, because you will need them. And like John mentioned earlier in the pod, if you can tune into Express FM on Boxing Day from 6 p.m, we will be hosting a special 3-hour The best sort of, I don't know, what do we want to call it? The best soundtrack?
Best movie soundtrack. Yeah, that's right. So just to recap, get your pen and paper ready now, just before we go. That is the 22nd of December, Friday, the 22nd of December, 6 p.m, South Sea Cinema, Palmerston Road in Portsmouth. If you're here or down this end of the world, southseacinema.co.uk to get your tickets. Come see Elf with us. That will be amazing. Then tune in. We've got lots going on to say. There's a composer series coming Christmas Eve, 6 p.m, Express FM. Check that out. There'll be a lot of Christmas-themed music. Also, Christmas Day, I'm back with Lily Park on Christmas Day on Express FM. Check us out at 7 p.m. You're on Christmas Day.
I'm on Christmas, usual time, 10 a.m. on Christmas Day with Hannah Roper. Yeah.
Yep, you are, if you want to check us out over the Christmas period. And I say, yeah, Paul and I will be back Boxing Day, 6 p.m. We will be playing what we consider to be the best movie soundtrack song. So it's going to be like a really long tip top five, where we just choose loads of play you loads of great music. ExpressFM.com for more details. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll be back in 2024. Thank you.